everybody. I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast, where we give you insights into post-traumatic stress, trauma recovery, healing, and beyond. I'm Dr. Deb Lind, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind, touch your heart, and connect with your spirit, and also give you a greater understanding of yourself and others on this healing and recovery journey walked by so many of us before, wounded healers with lived experience and heroes. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into possibilities and purpose, hope, and inspiration. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. One last thing, guys, before we dive into today's episode, if you'd like an ad-free experience and like early access to new episodes and special events, I want to let you know you can join us at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/PTSD and beyond. All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. You are never going to believe it in a million years. Pause. Do you want to know who our guest is today? Actually, they're more like a co-host. I think we'll go with a co-host than a guest. Maybe a little combination. So how many times have you ever met somebody from social media? And you just say, hey, you know what? Anybody want to do this? And someone says, yeah, I think I'm going to do that. So today's co-host of our wonderful podcast is a person that I met on Twitter. And if you're not following them, you should, because they have amazing stuff that they post. And in addition to the things that they post, you want to make notes about what they're going to have to say today, because he's an expert in imposter phenomenon, coach and subject matter expert, along with a PhD candidate in psychology. So they know their stuff, a mental health advocate. So we already know you got peer support, right? And a fun factoid is he's also a middle school volleyball coach. So how cool is that? Let's give a heartfelt welcome to Victor Moscone. Victor, welcome to PTSD and Beyond.
Hello. Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
For sure. Absolutely. It's good to connect. And we had some fun before starting to record, and hopefully we'll continue that fun and talk about the topic of trust, which was the subject of Monday's PTSD and Beyond chat that happens every Monday at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And you want to know what's really cool about what happened on Monday? I can't believe this. Okay, everybody, this is like a double oh my gosh moment. We freaking hit number two. So we bumped out our group. Okay, you were there.
Yeah.
Claudia was there. Gloria was there. I mean, Mary was there. We bumped out a trending hashtag, and there's always two trending hashtags on Monday night, right? And we were two, and two. So that meant our content was number two, our engagement was number two, and our interactions were number two.
Wow. So our
straight across the board. So globally, out of all the chats that happened on Monday, we, in addition to bumping out a trending hashtag, the conversation that we generated globally was the number two chat.
That's fantastic. That is wild. That's very cool.
And we talked about
trust.
Can't
wait for the coming weeks
too. No doubt, right?
Yeah.
What does it tell us though? That tells us that trust is something that people want to talk about. People want to talk to other people about across the world.
It's a big issue. It's a important issue that connects everybody in various different ways. And so when people hear it, they want to connect into it. They want to see what else is going on because it really is impactful.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about it on Monday too, about what happens when we don't have trust. What does it do to our mental health? You know?
Oh yeah. Oh, well, I mean, trying to remember some of the things that we had talked about with it, but it was just the fact on how it was the aspect of when we don't have that trust, we just lose that connection with others. We can lose a connection with ourselves, where you end up creating all these other aspects of, you know, anxiety, worry, stress, you know, whether it's mental and physical, that it really just, it takes us out of being able to feel calm and secure in our environment with those particular people that we feel we should have trust with. And it literally just spins us off in another direction with it.
Yeah, we talked about how the lack of trust amplifies isolation. People were talking about being hypervigilant and the details of hypervigilance of looking behind my back or being aware of surroundings, being apprehensive of compliments. Somebody was talking about whenever they've had situations where trust has been broken, they have a difficult time accepting and hearing compliments. So not having trust in our lives makes us fragile.
Oh, definitely.
It makes us fragile. So something else that somebody brought up too how is trust earned, right? How do we develop and cultivate trust?
That one can be, well, it depends on where you're coming from, because in some cases it could be very easy where it's just based on interactions and communications where people will sometimes just go into situations very trusting because they figure it's a new situation, new person, they've got no previous negative experiences. And so they just kind of roll from there. But in other cases, to build it up, it could take a long time because you're looking at actions, you're looking at behaviors,
right?
You're not even just looking at the initial action or behavior that you see. If you've had issues before, again, with hypervigilance, you could be looking beyond to see, okay, well, that person interacted fine with me, but how are they acting over there? What's going on in that? What did they say? What were they doing? So you're so aware of what else is going on that you're using that to build your understanding of trust with that person. And it's a lot to actually have to go through to build and connect with the trust.
Yeah. You know, that the one of the challenges too about that hypervigilance is the projection of the future. So the person is interacting with somebody and maybe they don't have that negative experience or that lived experience of, I trusted somebody and then that trust was broken. And they're still trying to navigate whether they can trust their own feelings and trust what their own perceptions are in that moment. And then trying to project and figure out what's the future gonna be like. In a world where people say that trust is something that's valued, how do we think that, you know, I don't know, I ask myself this question all the time. How do I think that trust is gonna change? Will it continue to be something we struggle with, or will it be something that we don't struggle with it in the way that we struggle with it today?
Ooh.
I know, deep correct. Hey, you know what? You set yourself up for coming on here because you're the PhD candidate. Come on.
Because my first thought was, no, it's going to be something that we always struggle with just because of the different type of people that there are, the complexities of people, the experiences that everybody has.
Yeah.
But when you put that into it and just look at aspect of technology and how that's changed over the past 20 years using
good
that,
point. Yeah.
It could actually end up having repercussions on trust, you know, 20 years from now, where how we trust, there's always going to be, I think, some definitely consistencies with it because when you're interacting directly with somebody, but I could see trust having other layers that develop because of other experiences, other developments, whether it's technology or just the way we communicate or interact with people. There's going to be a variety of different things that people will use or be aware of when building trust or evaluating trust.
Yeah, no doubt. And what happens when we do have trust?
Oh, we have trust. It's great. It's this almost sense of freedom because you just feel this sense of relief, this security, this feeling of just not actually having to worry or even questioning. You're not you know, running through your mind with, you know, 100 different thoughts of how something could go wrong, or is it going to go wrong, or what's going to happen next. You just are able to kind of move on with what you need to, knowing the other person or the situation or whatever is going on is going to work out fine. And if for some reason there is issues, you also feel like, okay, that person and I, for instance, can work it out. We'll figure something out. And so again, there's still that sense of security and calmness.
Yeah, no doubt. Yep. Somebody on the chat mentioned that they don't feel like the shoe's going to drop when they're with somebody who they trust. Over time, they get to a place mm-hmm. and they're in a place with that relationship with that person where they don't feel like that shoe's going to drop anymore. And to have that pause moment of, oh my gosh, you know what? I'm not feeling like that. I'm not thinking like that anymore. I'm able to, you know, I'm able to let my hair down and relax. And like you're saying about, you know, being calm and having that sense of freedom, there's that space of calmness and knowing that everything's okay, that there isn't anything to be hypervigilant about, or those tapes to stop playing. For myself, with my trauma, one of the things, I have a physical condition from my trauma, or the trauma, I don't want to say it's mine, the trauma, is my hands will get really cold and clammy. My nervous system is, that's my barometer. And that's why I don't like to shake hands with people. I actually did a presentation at the state of Minnesota and talked about this, because what my mentor said, you have to come out with this. And I'm like, oh, I cannot stand shaking hands with people. It makes me so uncomfortable. When I'm with somebody that I trust, what I notice immediately is like, because I've lived with this since I was like 3 years old. I mean, it's always been like this. And I'm warm. So my nervous system is like, you know, there's no stranger danger.
Right.
And my hands are warm and just wonderful. And I remember when I met someone who actually said, you know, I know that when we meet, you won't have that. You won't have that challenge. And I'm like, I don't know about this. Cause I'm like, I don't know, man,
my body's
telling me one thing. I live Vander Kalk stuff, right? You know, your body keeps the score, and it's always been like that. And, anyway, and so, that was actually very true. And so I look at the way that, you know, the trust factor is, you know, what are my hands telling me? Because my hands will let me know whether or not I feel like I can trust somebody before my brain actually says, oh yeah, or oh no, you know?
Right.
But it is interesting about how other people have said that when they are in a sense of trust and trusting, how they also have physical and emotional releases, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I can totally believe that. So mine definitely wouldn't be, you know, like a heat sensation with my hands, but I could definitely feel, for me, it would be a combination of like tightening in my chest.
Oh yeah.
So I just know that, because there's been times where like I could already feel it happening. Mm-hmm. And then almost my body just tenses, because it's that feeling of preparing myself, knowing that something is going to occur. And so I'm physically kind of getting myself ready to, I don't want to say react to it, but almost expect it and prepared to experience it.
Yeah. We embrace.
And I can just talking about it now, I could just feel like those moments, and I could just feel it where it wouldn't just be my shoulders. Cause that was my first thought. I'm like, no, because then I would feel it around like my back ribs and chest and even my leg muscles. It was like my whole body would just start to tense, like, okay, get ready.
Yeah, right. How can we help? Well, first of all, thanks for sharing that. Welcome. You know, I mean, you're sharing it with over, you know, like 96 countries. So thank you for putting yourself out there. I think one of the beauty of doing what we do and being peer advocates is that we do put ourselves out there, and then it helps other people at the same time say, oh, you know what, there's, I feel like a connection. I can resonate with what you're saying. When we're helping other people with trust, right? People show up on Monday and it's like they trust the space. They trust the people that are there. People listen to the podcast and know that, okay, I get the gist. I understand what this podcast is all about. When we're helping other people be aware of trust, how do we help people with trusting themselves? And how do we help ourselves with trusting ourselves? That's another deep question. You know, again, I'm going to fall back on the PhD candidate.
But it's, and also really
imposter, you know, imposter phenomenon. I'm running with it, Victor.
See, but that's just it. And it ties directly into that because, you know, when you're experiencing imposter phenomenon, you often don't trust yourself. You don't have that belief within you or trust that you're capable of doing things. So it ties in directly where you have to be able to grow, to be able to build up interactions, experiences, and build up trust. You have to really start with yourself because if you don't trust yourself, you don't have, you know, belief in your own abilities or just who you are, it's going to be hard to bring that trust to others because you're already insecure with yourself, be the best way to put it. And that's going to carry over when you meet people. So when you're trying to build that trust up for yourself, it's getting those steps to truly appreciating who you are and, in essence, really believing in what you do, even when it comes to, like, you know, making decisions. It's, you know, we, and with imposter phenomenon and PTSD, you get to this point of like, should I do this? No, should I do that? No, I should do that. No, I shouldn't do that. And it can get to that point too, where you're like, well, I can't trust myself, so I guess I have to ask somebody else, which can also bring trust issues depending on who you're asking, because then it's a whole big cycle of just mind numbing chaos within. So to do so though, it's almost that point of going, okay, I'm going to make this decision and not question it, but get to that point of like, okay, so you're just going to go with this decision and see what happens. And you just kind of start building it from that point. If for some reason that decision doesn't work out right, you then go, okay, well, what can I learn from that decision? What can I do next time? So again, you don't look at it like, okay, see, I made a mistake. I can't trust myself. I can't do this. It's more of just a learning process of realizing, okay, I'm building trust within myself and it's going to take steps. Just like it would be with somebody else when you're meeting somebody or rebuilding trust, as we had talked about on Monday as well, it's going to take steps. So if you're meeting somebody, it's like, okay, well, they seemed really nice, had a nice conversation. Or I worked with them, this project worked well, whatever, big or small. It's like, okay, that's a first step in trust. And it just kind of like one step at a time, and that's all you can do. And again, if a problem comes up, you look at it for the problem that it is and learn from it and readjust for the next time, instead of going back to, let's say, an old way of saying, nope, I made a mistake. I can't trust myself. It's like, nope, go from this point and move forward. But it takes time. It takes effort and lots of work.
Yep. Consistent daily action. Absolutely. How do we rebuild trust with somebody that has either broken the trust or fractured it in some way? So broken meaning, you know, a significant event kind of thing. It fractured it meaning like, I'm talking like on a spectrum here.
Right.
It hurt. Both are hurt, but one, there's a difference between it hurt and it was painful, right?
Definitely. There's definitely a difference. And I really liked a lot of the different interactions and responses on this from Monday. But if it's just it hurt, I know some of them were saying, okay, well, you've got to communicate with the other person. So this way the other person knows and you can actually have like a dialogue to understand where that hurt was coming from, why it occurred. So you can both make improvements for the next time. And again, it's a matter of taking time. And yes, if it did, when you're in that situation, you're going to have to be aware as to, will it occur again the next time a situation comes up? Hopefully you're not hypervigilant to the point where you're stressing out going, oh, is it going to happen? But you're growing and moving forward with good intentions.
Right.
When it's a big break, and I remember adding to this and seeing it from others too, there's a lot to it because it really depends on that other person. Are they remorseful? Do they want to change? Do they realize what occurred? Do they realize that, oh, wow, this was a really big issue and we need to work together. I need to make changes, whatever it might be. If that's the case, then again, you kind of go through those steps of slowly building it, keeping that communication open. But as a lot we're saying too, it's like if that person doesn't have any desire to make a change or they don't see it as an issue, then you won't be able to rebuild that trust because that's you don't have a foundation to work off of then.
Yeah. You know what I found too is that in certain there have been relationships, and I was thinking about this on Monday, examples. I was talking to somebody about this too the other day, after my thought, is that sometimes a fracture or a break can actually make the relationship even stronger. I can remember I had a relationship with a friend. We were not friends at all when we first met. We actually did not like one another at all. And we were very overt about how we didn't like one another.
Oh, wow.
Yep. I didn't like her. She didn't like me. Just not going to work out. Never going to be friends, right? That kind of thing. And her and I were exchanging words. And as we're laughing about it, it's not funny, but at the looking back at it, it's, you know, it is funny.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
So we're exchanging words, right? You know, when I think about you, what she thinks about me, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, you know, East Side Detroit girls going at it. And next thing I know, right, the person she's supposed to be with is with another woman, right? Oh my God. And then she starts crying and I'm like putting my arms around her, telling her, honey, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Right. And I'm consoling her. And from that moment on, I mean, I'm telling you, we were at each other's, we had some words. But from that moment on, I mean, we were very good friends, you know, and we were friends for many, many years. And then of course, you know, we both, you know, go off on her, you know, I moved from Michigan and she stayed. And, but yeah, that moment, oh my gosh, she was just like, oh, I can't believe it. And I'm like, I can't believe it. You know, I was like, let him go. And just like, you are too good for him. You know, I was hugging her and everything. And we just like 10 minutes before that, it was like, you know, I was like, yeah, what do you got to say? Right.
But that's really great though, because I mean, in that moment, it's like that one event changed everything and it really kind of built this connection of trust between you two, because she could see you were sincere, regardless of what you guys said before or how you would, you know, go against each other. That was a huge moment for her and you took it and were there being helpful, supportive, consoling her. And that made a big difference for trust. It wasn't even an issue of like, all right, what are you doing?
Yeah, it's no, like it was not. It was not at all. It was immediate.
The dynamic.
Yeah, no. And I've actually seen this in the workplace too, with some projects that I've done. And another one that comes to mind, there were, again, two women. What is it with us? again, it was causing so much problem in the workplace. I was like their last resort. You're either going to help us with this or not. And you would have never thought, I mean, one of the owners of the company, one of them was like, if you would have told me after doing this workshop that these two would have came together, I would have never, ever put my money on that. So there is something to be said that when two people do not trust one another, or they have a relationship and it's broken or goes through a, you know, a very difficult period that fractures and can even break that trust, people can come together and be stronger because of it. If you think about, you know, I don't know what it's called, but I know I'll describe it and somebody will know, you know, it's the Japanese art where something's fractured and it's filled with gold, right?
Yep.
And it actually...
can't think of what it's called either, but I know it. Yes.
So there are situations where once trust is broken, it can come back and be stronger. And be sometimes things like that just have to happen, which is weird.
True.
Why do you think it's so hard to have trust and maintain it? We all want it. So why is it so hard?
I think sometimes there's expectations.
Yeah.
Gets in the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think our own mistrust within ourselves will affect it too. We'll project it onto the other person.
Mm-hmm.
And aspects of comparison and jealousy that can pop up for any number of reasons, even and not intentionally, but it could be for any other reasons. It can end up creating and starting aspects of difficulties with trust. And even though, yes, we do want it, those are things that can actually create barriers and difficulties that make it more difficult for us to build the trust and keep the trust, or, you know, and develop it, because we'll throw these other obstacles in the way of our own self.
Mm-hmm. Kat, that's a good point. We throw obstacles in our own way. You know who's really trusting? Well, there's a couple of things I can think of. Our children. Have you ever noticed kids?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, they're just like, they go through life and they just trust. They really do.
They don't even question it. They just come to you really going, okay,
right. What are
we doing? What's going on? Okay. You say, all right, we do it. It's like, what?
Mm-hmm. There are examples that we can look just around, that emulates trust. Children, animals. If you look at, I love it when, there's a dog that, doesn't know you. I happened today going to get food for Max. Holy buckets. There was this dog. He was so excited to see me. I was like, I don't know you. You're supposed to be like, hey, who are you? What do you want? What do you want over here by these bully sticks? Now, these are my bully sticks, right? This dog was just like, that tail was moving so fast. I was like, you're going to knock something over, honey, But yeah, animals and children
And it's great too, especially, using the animal one with dogs. It's like they'll wag their tail and it's like they'll see you and it's like, oh, a new play friend. They know nothing about you, don't know anything about your past. They don't know, are you really going to pick up that stick and throw it, or that ball and throw it? Are you going to pet my head? They know none of it, but they come up to you like, okay, let's go, without any kind of consideration or concern. It's like, okay, sure, pat on the head. Here, exactly. Go get this.
One of the other things too that we talked about in the chat was leaders and trust in the workplace and leaders. And what's really cool about this too is Jennifer Tsang. She's always talking about, she's got a great, give a shout out to her. She has a chat called Leaders Chat that happens on Wednesdays. And today she actually used Twitter Spaces. We've been asked if we're going to move over to Twitter Spaces. Oh. The way that our timeline works is that we accommodate most of the world, except our good friends over in Western Europe and the UK and Ireland. And so we're trying to figure out a time where the chat can have I want to call it an encore presentation, but more of a part two, I suppose. But leaders, how can the workplace be a place of trust?
With leaders, it's about transparency. It's about being honest, regardless of whether something is going good or bad. And even in their own aspect of being a leader, if they've done something wrong, that connection with transparency, it's just owning up to it. Because this way, they realize, I'm the leader, I'm the one. Even if it's a group effort, in essence, where it's like, yeah, we all kind of made mistakes here and there. As a leader, you should be the one to own up and accept it.
Yep.
But also take it to the next step, going, okay, but this is what we can do. Or pulling everybody together and going, okay, how do we want to work through it?
Yep.
But it's definitely making sure you're truly, open with communication and understanding and honesty. Because this way, everybody else will go, okay, all right, I got you. I hear what you're saying. And yes, I can work with you, as opposed to, not doing so. And everybody's like, those words that are coming out, they're just words. They mean there's nothing to back them up.
Yeah. Do you think it's when someone says something too, that the way that they say it is emulates trust?
Yes. I think that's the first step in it. the tone, inflection, how they say it, how they present information, what they're talking about, definitely can have it, because you can say a sentence and be very compassionate, supportive, honest with it. You can say the same sentence and be very condescending in tone and attitude, and it completely changes the dynamic of what you're saying and how people will receive it. So yes, that has a huge, huge effect on it.
And the meaning of it too, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So let's circle back to the imposter phenomenon. I mean, with trust and that imposter syndrome, imposter phenomenon, where are some of the roots of it? You know, if we, you know, the seeds, so the thing that actually started it, the cause and the effect, the learned behavior of it. I'm really fascinated by your work, by the way. I can't wait for your dissertation to be done. And yes, that's a shout out, because I would love to it when it's done. We'll put a hyperlink onto this episode and have people go read it.
Oh, that'd be great. It's going to be several months in the works, but yes, I would love that. But where a lot of this starts, for many people who have had imposter phenomenon, and yes, imposter syndrome is the same thing, for like most of their lives, it usually starts in their childhood. Often it's connecting into a variety of different things, where it could be an aspect of them always having to be the best. So in everything they do, and their sense of worth is connected to an object or a prize as opposed to who they are as a person. It could also be connected. So it's like, for instance, as an example, it could be you're an athlete. So, you know, you have to be the best. You have to win the championships. If you don't, you're not good enough. Taking that with it, it could be grades, you know, so you could get 3 A's and a B. Well, if they're looking strictly at the B, well, why isn't that an A? It's dismissing all your other achievements. So obviously you're not good enough. So there's those aspects of having that ultimate goal kind of thrown out there. That's what it connects with. So when kids are, you know, growing up, they can be looked down upon. It's like, for instance, taking aspects of boys and girls, using just those two, for instance, you'll have parents or other adults saying, oh, you'll never get to that point. You're just a girl. Mm-hmm. Or even other aspects of whether it's doesn't matter what gender, it's like, you know, you're just not going to be good enough for it. You just can't. You're already cutting them down, because they're sometimes parents do it in a way to control because of their own fears. Others, it could be just their own past, whatever's happened to them. So they project it, of course, onto their kids. Doing so then creates this mind, basically this belief that, okay, I'm not good enough. No matter what I want to do, I'm not. And even though they'll start achieving those things, they may have that drive. And most people who experience high imposter phenomenon go through and will achieve a lot. But even through those achievements, they constantly feel like, yeah, but it's, I'm not good enough to be here. I really didn't do it. I had it by luck. It was by chance. I did achieve this, but it's still not good enough because I should achieve this next step.
Right.
So a lot of this stuff does come from early childhood, how parents interact with their kids. Do they actually support them? Is it an issue of kids actually, even if there's two parents, you know, are both parents along the same way? Or do you have one parent that's more, let's say, condescending and another parent that's supportive? Many kids will, of course, feel like, okay, well, I've got the support from the one parent. Yes, good. The one that's supportive, the other one that's not giving me support. I need support. So what do I do for it? Because again, kids don't really understand. So they're trying to understand how that works. And it's a big tug of war in their own mind, where it sets them off on this path for a very long time of constantly looking for outward sources of approval and appreciation.
And you know what? Right there, all of those things are about trust. Always constantly looking, you know, this well that needs to be continuously filled. A phrase that I find is common that people will say, and they say it out of love, but I think that in our trauma community, it's not a very trauma-informed phrase, which is trust the process. You know, like when someone's struggling and someone says, trust the process. Don't you just want to say, wait a second here. You know, I've been struggling for 18 months or whatever time. And I'm laughing about it because, I mean, there's a bit of humor in recovery and healing. And mm-hmm. so what do we do when somebody, when we're struggling, right? We're in pain, we're suffering. Another shout out to Dr. Wong and his work with suffering, right? The meaning of suffering. What do we do when someone says, trust the process?
I hate that phrase because I mean, especially look at the aspect of just working on a PhD, you know, from your own doctorate, it's not just, okay, it's 6 months, boom, I'm done. There's so much to go into it. You're going in circles. I personally at points earlier on felt like I was literally in just a cylinder spinning around, going nowhere. Even though I would constantly be adding information, I thought like, okay, I'm adding information, but I don't feel like I'm going anywhere. So this process, because it fits with it, this process that I'm trusting, I'm just spinning in circles. Where is this process taking me? Except for just anxiety, depression, suffering that I'm not doing anything except gaining more information, but it's going nowhere. And to me, yes, I did have people say, oh, it's okay, it's just part of the whole process, you're good. And that was kind of that same idea of trusting the process. I'm thinking, I don't want to keep spinning in circles. This isn't helping me. And I think it's, for me, in that set, it was an aspect of just constantly looking at small things. Okay, what am I doing? What's my main goal? Of course, the main goal is to get it completed and published. But the smaller main goal was to pull the information so everything looks like it's flowing, that it should, like it all falls into place and that it makes sense and it's all aligning and the information is all heading in the same direction. Okay, I'm gaining a lot of information. This is good, but obviously that's not fully there yet. And so I had to kind of break it down into small pieces. And I said, forget the process. I don't care about the process. I need to just look at what am I working on and what are the pieces of this puzzle, basically. And that's what helps me. And I think that's what you have to do, at least for some, is get them to actually not look at the entire process from beginning to end and see the flow, but looking at what they're working on. What have they achieved? What have you accomplished now compared to where you were before? So you can at least see the growth in that and understand, okay, regardless of the full process, am I working towards my goal? Am I working towards the point that I'm trying to get to? And by doing so, then you can at least have trust that you're doing what you need to.
I love what you're saying.
Feel like it?
Yep. Even if it doesn't feel like it. I love what you're saying here because you're taking it into smaller bite-sized pieces. I think right. that what bothers us, and I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I think that what I'm hearing is, and I'm having an awareness of why this phrase, trust the process, doesn't resonate well, positively, mm-hmm. with people who are survivors of trauma and that are also mental health advocates and also doctoral candidates, is because the process is the problem. It's so large that to say, true. Trust the process, I can't, it's so big. But what I hear you saying is trust the moment, trust yes. the pieces, and trust yourself.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
That's what I hear you saying.
Yep. I would agree with that. Definitely.
To add on to our conversation, what are like a couple other nuggets, Victor, to share with people before we end this conversation? And I hope that I can trust that you'll come back.
Oh, definitely. I would love to. Yes, cool. Most definitely. I've enjoyed this. Okay. A couple other pieces. Remembering that trust is, I don't want to use that word now. I was going to say a process. And I'm like, no, I don't want to use that word. But trust takes time. And even if it's within yourself, take it just one step at a time, constantly building up that trust and growing with it is the best way to do it. And same with somebody else. If you're connecting with someone, you're concerned about trust, again, just take it as a one step at a time. Don't worry, or you're going to worry, but don't go into it thinking, I can't trust them at all when you're just starting to meet them. Let it kind of grow, and communicate would be the next one. Mm-hmm. If it's somebody that you really want to connect with, and that's important, whether it's a personal connection, relationship, or a professional one, communication would be another one. When trust is fractured, if it seems a little wobbly, or if it does get broken, you need to be able to communicate why, how it made you feel, what occurred with it. But on the other end of it, if that relationship, whatever it is important, be open to listening and having a dialogue through that communication. It's not a one-sided interaction.
Right? Yeah, for sure. So what I'm hearing you say is communicate, connect, and grow. Yes. And then the outcome will be a foundation of trust.
Hopefully, yes. That would definitely, that's what you want. So that would be the beautiful part of it.
Beautiful. Victor, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
You're welcome. Hey guys, this is Dr. Dell with PTSD and Beyond. Remember to check out Victor's summary bio. And if you do happen to connect with him, please let him know that, hey, you know what? I heard you on PTSD and Beyond. And remember, an episode drops every week. And thank you so much to all 96 countries. We're completely grateful for every one of you. And if the person who's still with us today, you know what? You totally rock. You stuck it out with us again, another episode. And we'll see each other again next week.